Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
And it's me, Brian. I almost said Niall again. And on this second attempt at recording this episode, we are covering the anime that aired the week of the 16th of July 2018 and the 22nd of July 2018. Hopefully another computer won't die in the process.
Oh, we can't lose too many good men.
Oh, someone's ringing me up. Let me just hang on. I'm pretty sure. Answer it on the phone because I'm sure it will be somebody pretending to be a scam.
Pretending to be a scam, not just straight up a scam.
Hello? Hello? Oh, it's Shirley from Internet Service Provider. She sounds like a robot. Right. Goodbye, Shirley.
I'll get a doctor to check that out.
Do you get those scams in Ireland?
Well, so it's someone pretending to be a scam.
Pretending to warn you of a scam. It's that kind of thing. It's somebody who pretends to be, depending on the competency of the scam.
Yeah.
So sometimes they'll say they're from British Broadband Company or something, which is a non-existent company.
Okay, that's not a good one. Okay.
And they'll say there's some sort of illegal activity happening on your line, or there's some sort of we're going to have to cut you off within the next 24 hours if you don't press 1 now.
But that's like press to fucking go further into the rabbit hole. Right.
So that one was clearly a automated voice. Sometimes it's a recorded human being. I assume using those like Fiverr things. So,
right, okay.
Fiverr, where somebody will get paid.
Yeah,
$5.
You pay him £5. Yeah,
for doing something. Dave Gorman covered it on his show about how lots of these scams will use people from there to like pretend to be winners in a competition or experts.
Wow, that's quite in depth. That sounds interesting, but fortunately I haven't been targeted by any of that.
Well, it happens constantly in the UK. That's my second one today.
It's probably that, in the UK, like, maybe some particular service provider or whatever the fuck, their information got fucking sold on, so everyone's on a fucking list.
Oh, no, it's just the machine calls. It's just...
But just to the UK, that's so strange.
It's just ringing until it finds a number. And now, it used to be that they'd show up from outside of the UK, and then you go, ignore that. But now they're masking their numbers with things which look like real numbers, but then when you look them up, they've got like a real...
Okay.
They've got a real... what are they called? Not a country code. They've got a real code for an area. Area code. That's the word. God, it's hot.
Code for an area.
Area code. But then the number itself, when you look it up, it'll be nothing. And they cycle through them as well, so they can't even get put on sites to say this is a scam number because they're not using the same one.
They can just randomly generate something that looks legit.
Yeah. So they're like picking like small towns in Scotland where clearly they could have. There's lots of numbers which haven't been allocated yet. So you're like, why are BT ringing me from there? most of them are unconvincing, but there's a few where you think, oh, if I was a stupider person or I wasn't paying attention, I might think that this is not stupider, but a less savvy person. Stupid is too mean.
Yeah, the only thing I'm stuck on is some Australian fucking phone network thing. I keep getting bills from them, inverted commas, but I don't click the links in the emails and shit. I just went to their site, got onto their helpline. They're like, yeah, it sounds like a scam, just ignore them. But everything else looks pretty legit on them, so obviously someone's using my name wrong, or it's just straight up a scam.
Talking about all about scams, it's Lupin the Third, Part 5. Imagine that episode of this where they're just setting up a machine calling scam.
That's pretty lowball for Lupin. I feel like they'd have to set up like a machine call thing to rob an entire country or something at this stage.
Yeah. It seems more like something those Shake Hands guys would be up to.
Or is that too low tech for them even?
Quite possibly, yeah.
It's all remote controlled blimps from here on out.
Yeah, who are the real criminals? Is it the thief who breaks into things and steals jewelry? Or is it the businessman?
Both.
Yeah. That is correct.
It's just one tends to get arrested. Although, to be fair, Luban doesn't tend to get arrested.
Yeah, I think I feel like this would do a speech at some point where Lupin's like, at least like, hey,
I'm legitimately a thief. That's my occupation.
I tell everybody I'm a thief. I leave a note to say I'm coming to steal a thing.
It's very polite. Yeah, yeah. They got a chance. Not much of a chance, but you know.
Because it's like, how many people would sign up to Facebook if, rather under the terms and conditions, it just said, we are going to steal your data and give it to bad guys?
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to take down your country. Probably not many. Yeah.
Yeah. So, this episode is all about Fujiko and her relationships with Lupin and Amy. Mm. As she tries to save the pair of them from the military. Well, the half of the military who's on the side of the traditionalists who are trying to do a coup at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Because obviously they're... and even... what's the princess's name again? I keep forgetting.
Yeah, I keep forgetting as well.
Because I keep thinking it's Padar, and it's like, no, that's the country.
That is the country, yes.
It's nope. Princess of Padar. But yeah. But yeah, she's obviously saying, it's like, okay, you can get him, but don't hurt Amy.
Yeah.
Because she still considers her friend, despite her... betrayal, and it seems more like she's kind of more interested in doing the. It comes across that she's more interested in doing the coup because A, they're not going to kill her dad, according to what they've told her, and B, she'll be a puppet leader, but she knows if she's still in that position, she can incite a revolution later down the line.
Yeah, it's a bit like a bit of Amy, my friend, but you're not trusting me to be able to. Deal with this.
She's trying to handle it as best she can. Like, the situation's kind of fucked, and it's like, well, I'm just going to do it this way. Like, yeah, yeah.
Dalma is...
Princess Dalma, yeah. Okay.
And to that end, Maguire, who we learn's real name, I believe, is Ugo.
Yeah, yeah.
Has sworn fealty to her rather than the CIA in America.
Yeah, it feels like she kind of turned him with... you know, kind of royal demeanor where she just like, you will be my first, I've forgotten the word for a person who works for like a king or a queen or whatever the hell. Retainer? Is it? Something like that anyway.
Yeah.
But, and he's like, well, you just expect me to work for you. But like the way she just like commands authority, he's just like, oh, fuck, you're legit. All right, I'll work with you. Yeah. That kind of way. Which is interesting. It seems like nearly he's flipping, pretending to flip, but I feel like it's genuine based off the rest of the episode.
Yeah, because they mentioned that he was supposed to have killed her. And
he didn't want to see the same thing that happened to his country happen here. He said, we'll try and do as bloodless as possible a coup.
Yeah. Mm. And meanwhile, the king has been flown out of the country. Well, flown above the country. Not out of the country.
He's safe in the air, in the sky.
By the Shake Hands Corporation. And we see the guy with the goatee, his face still half in shadow in this. Who was from the start of the series.
Like a combination Zuckerberg, who the fuck else is he? Like whatever
Assange,
it is.
I guess a bit of Assange as well.
Yeah. There's a bunch of like shady shit on the net. Like he's trying to set up the new Twitter, Facebook, fucking social media thing, which will destroy all the countries involved in it. Mm.
Yeah, half the countries, I think he says.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The king's like, which then has like a oh, hang on, I've got somebody at the door.
Oh, busy day.
God, it's all go, Shay Brian. That was the man from Amazon. Bringing me the latest volume of One Punch Man.
Nice.
So the king looks a little worried about the shake hands plan that they've got. Amy's kind of admiring Fujiko for about half the episode, and then Fujiko is Fujiko and appears to betray her and Lupin and make off with the bloody teardrop for herself. But she's
appears to be like throwing them to the wind rather than actually becoming a distraction herself.
Yes.
Becoming an active distraction, I suppose.
Yes, yeah. Because they hit a a fallen tree in the jungle and they can't get past it on the motorcycle and sidecar they've got. So Fujiko shoots off the sidecar with Amy and Lupin in it and then just drives off on the motorcycle.
Yeah. And you have these weird bits of, like, I guess, like, Amy, like, looking to her as a role model or as a something to aspire to be, because obviously she's just very good, and it comes across again that she's very good at what she does.
Yeah,
there's even that weird bit where, like, she, like, Lupin's shivering because, you know, he's been gut shot again. That line where she goes, "I good thing it missed all your vital organs." I was like, "Fucking son of a lucky bastard." But yeah, Fujiko gets into bed naked with him, and Amy's seeing this, but it's like, is she going to be, like, dreaming that that's her kind of thing? It's a weird thing. So it's like Fujiko's like an aspirational figure for her, exactly. Until obviously she betrays them, seemingly.
Yeah, because when in the caring for Lupin and the other thing she does, I think she realizes, I think up to this point she's thought, oh, well, sex is the only weapon Fujiko's got.
Yeah.
But then she sees there's plenty of other talents in her arsenal as well.
It's subtlety, confidence, obviously very happy with how to use her body. I mean, like, there she was just using it literally to keep him warm, that kind of way.
Yeah. Also, she makes Amy kill her first people by throwing a hand grenade into a truck.
That's right. There is that bit. It's like, well done. You just killed at least 5 guys, I think. And whoever was driving, it seemed to go straight into the river. So, yeah, she's kind of like, oh, I'll show you the ropes, kid. Here, throw this grenade into the back of that truck full of armed men.
Yeah, because Zenigata shows up part of the way through the episode. He's like, I wonder how angry he's going to be at what's happening to Amy.
Yeah, because she was like his pseudo-kid in a weird way.
Yeah.
But it's not like he tried to make her like an officer of the law. He just figured, oh, she'll be a fine citizen. But it's like, yeah, but if she's going to be trained by all these fucking crooks, guess what's going to happen, Zenigata? She's very leaning that way.
Yes. Is there anything else which happened? We get like a flashback of the pair of them when they were, Fujiko and Lupin, when they were younger, falling.
Yeah, a random time when they were younger criminals, flying. Robbing at Sky Pirates.
Yeah, Sky Pirates, by the looks of things.
Hmm. Yeah, where there's like the Fujiko falls because the rope gets shot, I think.
Yes.
Lupin jumps after, and then they make like a proposal to each other in midair, but, you don't see whose parachute goes off. So one of them clearly had this thing planned out, or both of them knew, or one of them knew.
Yeah.
That kind of way. It's fun. The episode is her relationship with Lupin, but it never explicitly out and out does it, but it keeps like all the flirting and the will they won't they thing. It doesn't need to out and out say anything. You can interpret different things from their interactions. The same as this scene. Yeah.
Yeah. And in the end, Lupin's about to, tell Fujiko his true feelings when some airship crashes.
Yeah.
At this point, the armies had to leave their mission to retrieve the bloody teardrop because they've got to go back and deal with this counter-revolution. All hands.
Yeah, on. Yeah. The king's guys, people loyal to the king, or army and police, I guess, loyal to the king, are kind of rising up in opposition. So.
Yeah. Except for the one guy who I think got beaten up by Lupin in the previous episode, who stays and is shooting a machine gun at him.
Oh, dear. Yeah. I do like Lupin taking another disguise in this one. How does he manage to print out those masks so quick? I don't know. It's a silly putty or something.
We also get Jigen and Goemon still in the city wondering whether Lupin actually needs them.
Yeah, yeah. I like we said in the prior recording, but I think he does lean on other people for help, but it's not like he needs Jigen's sharpshooting all the fucking time, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
In this episode, yeah. Obviously, he's heavily leaning on Fujiko.
And it's... I think it's more a trope with Goemon, particularly in the TV movies, where it's quite often he has nothing to do except show up 2/3 of the way through the film to slice something up with his sword.
Well, he just would have been sitting around up to that point anyway. Yes. He's not a very active participant. It's more so a reactionary kind of guy. Yeah,
yeah. It tends to be a plot involving some other clan who used to have a feud with his clan, or...
Yeah, it's never him starting the shit. It's him coming in to fucking end.
Yeah, or there's a woman who gets him flustered.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I guess that's the part of him being active. But again, he's still reacting in that situation.
Yeah. Whereas Jigen quite often has like, oh, this is a person I used to know when I was a hitman, as opposed to a thief. And
he's
a guy you can easily attach bits of past to, and you can easily like, oh yeah, that would make sense.
All of it fits. Yeah. What's going on does not make sense in the world he walks around in, so it's kind of more difficult.
Yeah, it was a good episode. The writing on this arc, I think, is the best it's been in terms of examining the characters.
There's so many turns, and there's how many different sides in this fucking fight? Not even including the thieves and everything, which have all their own different sides.
Yeah.
And it never gets muddy. It keeps it clear and it keeps the pace up.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Righty-ho. I'm just going to fiddle with something in a quick second.
Sure.
There we go. Properties, levels.
Am I coming in too loud, or?
No, I'm coming in too loud.
Oh, okay.
I don't think on this recording, but just through the microphone in general, I was.
Right.
Okay, that looks a lot better. Right. Righty-ho. This is teething troubles with a new recording, but at least it will record this time and not halfway through. Next on the list, we've got Late Night Tensai Bakubon, Episode 2. What was this one called?
Oh, let's see. This is a pain, and I want women to like me.
That was it. Yeah, so this is second episode. We're in the actual visual style they're intending to carry on in, except for the credit sequence, which is in a completely different style, and where they joke in the song, they've used all the budget up. All the money's been spent on this opening credits.
Yeah. Also, the four girls you show up to the date are in a different anime style.
Yes. Yeah, that is true. But they're coloured the same, at least.
Yeah. Same palette.
Yeah. So the first part involves Eel Dog sneaking into the house to wake the family up because it's the middle of the night and they're fast asleep, like all good anime characters should be. Because who watches TV Tokyo in the middle of the night? Everyone's watching the news. Only a couple of perverts would watch.
Yeah, so the dad's like saying, yeah, no one's really watching it. We could just put on a repeat or like do a recap episode. But it's episode 2, so they would only be recapping all the stuff that was like not in continuity that they did in the first episode.
So yeah, the old dog tries to convince him, why don't you just recap some of the things you did in the week in between episodes? And it's just him eating this one meal over and over again.
In different forms. There's many ways you can have, what was it, like asparagus and fucking liver or something.
Something, yes.
Yeah, I can't remember what the veg part of it was. But it was like, the fish dog going like, look at all the trouble you put to the animators to draw all these different versions of that same meal. And I mean, like, I was looking at the food, I was like, oh, that looks pretty good. And yeah, so that joke totally got me as well.
And then the opening credits, which is this sci-fi robots, magical girl combining thing where they all end up combining into the dad, and then he just does his catchphrase. Is it, that's the way it is?
That's how it should be.
Oh, something along those lines.
Yeah. I can't remember which way it is, but something like that.
And then eventually he gets fed up with Eel Dog's pestering and cooks him and feeds him to the family the next day. There's a nice change.
The family are none too pleased. I think they all fucking know.
Yeah.
So they're not going to partake in the joke.
They do comment that it doesn't quite taste proper.
Yeah, there's something fucked up about this. It's almost like it's also a dog and also Osamatsu. It's weird.
Then we get a bit where they decide to add a narrator because they've had a letter from a viewer who wants to walk away from the TV screen while the program's on, but still wants to know what's happening.
Yeah, he eats his dinner while watching this. So obviously he eats his dinner late at night, but he wants to know what's happening without having to look at the screen the whole time. So the narrator is there to fill in the gap for him. And it's just kind of, like you said, the setup for the next bit where a narrator suddenly fucking appears. It's like, you didn't need to establish a narrator appearing. But they took the time to do it.
Yeah, I like the gag of an anime getting viewers' letters, which they then read out.
and change the show accordingly in real time.
It feels like something they could do again.
Yeah, because they could use it. I mean, they don't even have to get letters. They just take the regular complaints things get, like dumbass complaints like that, and just go like, yeah, let's fucking do that. So see how you like it. And take the piss out of it. Yeah,
so the final part is the policeman with the connected eyeballs, which appears to be his name, has been invited to, he's managed to get himself invited to a mixer with four women, so he needs three more guys to come along to the mixer. So he assigns this job to Bakabon's dad.
I mean, like, he doesn't want to assign it to him, but Bakabon's dad assures him, it's like, yeah, I can do this.
Oh yes, because he claims he knows a lot of people.
Right. Yeah, I didn't know exactly the guys you kind of need for this. I know lots of people. It's like, don't just invite Rare. It's like, I'm not just going to invite Rare. Come on.
And so, yes, he just shows up with Rare Ray and Eel Dog and himself.
dear.
And then he just, the policeman just lies and lies and lies about himself and his friends. But the lies about himself don't really help him, but the lies about his friends
are more successful.
They're more successful, yes.
Like, he claims to run a boutique.
Yes.
And live on the top floor of some fancy part of town, but he refuses to say what number the floor is because he doesn't know how fucking tall those buildings are.
And doesn't he claim that Eel Dog is the president of Avex Records?
Yes. Yeah. That was it. I couldn't remember. I knew it was like a specific fucking company.
Yes, because they comment on his dark skin. And they go, oh, well, no, that's his, that you know.
He's got a tan from going on holiday so much because he's that rich. Or something, yeah.
They like his oily, slimy skin.
Which promptly makes him take him to the bathroom to, you know, go like, hey, come on, stop outshining me, buddy. But instead of that, no, he just shoots him in the fucking head. Second time he's died this episode.
Yeah, he's killed Ray already at this point.
Yeah, he kills Ray in the bathroom.
The dad is the only one left at the end. Because the dad's not crying at all. Because he's
no, the dad's just there to watch how badly this goes.
And make a reference I didn't get when he hits somebody with a giant dinosaur bone, like that Korean movie. I was like, what Korean movie? I don't know.
Yeah, I was wondering what movie that was as well. yeah, I don't know what the hell it would be. Oh, well.
There's the shoujo version of Rere.
The pretty one where he says Riri. Yeah. That was good.
I think Eel Dog gets killed first. I'm just going through. Yeah, he ends up pissing his pants. He ends up completely naked.
And he gets arrested for that, obviously. Well, for shooting a gun in public and being naked in public.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Ray survives. It's just the Eel Dog who gets killed second time.
I thought he gets, like, second time.
Yeah, Ray does get killed. I thought he was safe, and then it immediately cut to him getting shot in the head.
Yeah, he doesn't even take him to the bathroom. He, like, shoots him in front of the girls, and they all, you know, freak out. Understandably enough. and the dad's just watching on the news later that, like, naked, crazed gunman gets arrested.
Yes, at this point, the narrator's already involved.
Yeah. The narrator becomes involved to, like, say the inner workings of your man's mind, the policeman whose eyes are connected. What a complicated name. And also to comment on how insane his lies are and how poorly he's lying.
As I'm rewatching it to try and remember what happened, I think if I rewatched it now, I'd enjoy it more than I did the first time.
Sure.
Because I think these jokes are actually working on me better the second time around.
Okay.
Because when he comes back after killing Eel Dog in the bathroom, he goes, oh, he's gone home. He didn't feel very well.
Another lie.
And the girl's being impressed by Ray because he's good at cleaning. It's like, oh, I'm terrible at cleaning. You should come around my flat and clean my house up.
Yeah, obviously that's an in. So the policeman gets very, insanely jealous. I think that's fair to say.
Considering
murder, it's fair to say.
it was. I think, as I mentioned the first time around, Toru Hosokawa is the director and head writer.
Mm.
And I think I mentioned, he did the Polar Bear Cafe adaptation for anime.
Mm.
But I hadn't realized he'd also, like, done over a decade's worth of plays influenced or based on Fujio Akasuka's works, including 2007, there was one just called Genius Bakubon.
Mm.
And he had another one which was part of the 2013 celebration of his birth, 80th anniversary of his birth, which Mr. Osomatsu was also part of. So I was like, oh, this is where this has come. It's not just, oh, we're looking for another Osomatsu. I'm sure part of it is, oh, we're looking for another Osomatsu.
Yeah, maybe we're looking for another Osomatsu in terms of TV, but this guy's an old hand at this specific fucking franchise. Not even this style of humor, but at this thing.
Yeah. I don't think he did an Osomatsu one. I couldn't tell. But some of the titles are just clearly the names of the thing they're adapting, but some seem to be like a particular title of...
like the particular episode or whatever you want to call it.
He's one of these guys where I was like, oh, I wish there was an interview with him in English, because he's another guy out of theatre, and I always, guys out of theatre, I think, tend to do quite well in anime, because there's similar limitations. You don't want to write too many scenes in too many locations, because that's more stuff to draw.
Yeah, it's like you said, the missing bit, like the third part of this episode is very much so would work as a stage play.
Yes.
And it functions well because of that, because you just get the character and the dialogue and bouncing off each other. The jokes work great.
Yeah, so I'm now more fascinated by his other stuff.
Hmm.
Righty-ho, next on the old list is... Nobody watched Angoumoi, I don't think, did we?
No, I didn't manage to get it in.
Then we got Ninja Girl and Samurai Master. This was where the podcast came to a collapse. Oh no, it was Banana Fish, I think, was where it came to a collapse.
I think we got as far as Banana Fish.
Around this point was where it collapsed. So, blimey. Can you remember what happened in this episode of Ninja Girl and Samurai Master?
Right. Okay. Let me fucking think now.
The title will give us a clue. It is the March of the True Believers.
Obviously, the guys, the followers, have turned on Nobunaga and are being very boisterous about it. Like, Chidori kills like a lot of motherfuckers in this.
The first hit is her decapitating somebody.
Like, decapitation, arms, possibly some legs off. Blood everywhere, and then eventually, like, just sheer numbers overwhelms her, and one guy manages to pin her down and is about to kill her until, what's your man with the spear? He shows up, and he has his serious face on.
It's not the one who's going to die, is it? It's the one who's...
Spoilers!
I mean, they're all going to die.
It's history.
It's the one who's always got his talking about his happy marriage.
Yeah, because the joke is that Chidori's like, oh, you've got a different face on. It's like, yes, I have this serious face on when I'm in battle and when I'm reconfirming my love with my wife. And she gets really embarrassed about this, hearing this far too personal detail. It was that guy. He also gets saved from an arrow by the amount of letters from his wife that he has inside his jacket, which is a lot, like, you know, like a thick old book of them.
Yes. Oh, yeah. The love letters. Because this is the first time she can't quite get her head around the peasants being so devoted to their faith.
Yeah, there's a lot of knockdowns for her in this one as well, because obviously she's like, oh, fucking, I'm completely out of my league. Like, I can't throw a shuriken as far as these guys can shoot muskets. And the guy, they're having trouble because obviously these guys are an elite mercenary group that's much better at reloading and more consistent with their shots.
It's also the peasants that she's got problems with.
Yeah.
It's because they're not behaving like the soldiers she's met on the battlefield before, because they feel
they're not backing down to her fucking, her, like, terrifying decapitations. They believe in something, so they're not backing down at all.
Yes.
Mm.
And is it the rest of... Is it Psyche? So it's like, oh yeah, the rest of us are going to join the guys with the guns.
Yeah. There's another crowd that joined them. I've forgotten the guy with the scar on his face. Doesn't even fucking narrow it down on the show.
I'm sure we'll have to do it later. I think my favorite joke is
Morse code.
The Morse code joke. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. It was just the him going like beep 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 beep, you know. I was like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it was Kenyo sort of flashing the golden shine.
Just sort of like slapping his head, like in repeated things, like sending like battlefield signals to his troops, to his main scarred up monk guy.
And it ends with them. They break the levee and flood the Oda camp, turning it into a swamp.
Yeah, they do explain that again, that this guy's going to fuck with Oda for like for a couple of goddamn years.
And Chidori can't swim, in which case her psychic remembers. Oh yeah, that's your weakness. We've not mentioned it probably since episode zero.
It's not really come up, yeah.
Because episode zero is Nobunaga saves her from drowning in the river. So.
Yeah, it's the thing that starts her her devotion. Yeah.
But, yeah. Somebody else saved her by the sounds of things because he mentions that he wanted to perform mouth to mouth if only I'd move three times faster. So I'm interested to see, because they kind of like hint that this thing's going to go on a very long time. And I don't know how much detail they're going to get into the battles. I suspect.
Yeah, like I imagine this one's hitting like the main points of the regular people stepped up. They flooded the valley. Like it probably wants to cover like the big things that happen in the interesting fights. But yeah. I imagine it's going to like just skip past a bunch, just because there's going to be a lot of wars.
Yeah, there's probably be reactions of people back at home from both places and.
Presumably, if anyone fucking dies off, we'll pay attention to that battle or that kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, I think this is the battle where that guy with his sons survive, obviously, because they go on to be more important in the future. but yeah, he's on borrowed time because this is August at the moment. I think September is when he dies.
Oh shit! Okay.
Then we've got Banana Fish episode 3, which is called.
Across the river and into the trees.
Yes, in which Ash Lynx is now in prison. He's been put in a cell with Max Lobo to keep an eye on him.
I presume, like, since they had to get Max out and talk to him and ask him to protect this guy, and he's like, I got enough fucking problems of my own, Pally. But I imagine they pulled some strings to get him in his cell as well, that kind of way.
Yeah, because it feels like while the good guy cops didn't have much pull in the... jurisdiction where Ash got arrested,
obviously because they ask him, it's like, is it weird that he got arrested like and put into prison without a trial? It's like, yes, it is a little unusual, but it happens sometimes because of corruption.
But they seem to have more pull here, as does Max, because he feels like, oh, I can just ask and I can get moved to a different cell.
Yeah, and if he knows the cops, I guess then they're kind of looking out for him as well. Yeah. Because as we learn, he's not really a bad guy.
He's not really Max Lobo. He's Max Greenwald or something.
Crap. My brain is like Greg. No, not Greg. The other guy's name is Griff or something, isn't it?
Griff's is Ash's surname.
Yeah, yeah.
Aslan is his real name.
That did make me laugh. I was just like. Well, what's a cool name, cooler name than this? What about fucking Aslan, like the fucking lion? Yeah.
Yeah. The god stand-in in the Narnia books.
Jesus, but as a lion, what could be cooler than that? Ridiculously, like everyone's secret name is getting revealed in a heated debate in a prison cell. But most of the episode is Max. I'm just going to go with Max and Ash just because it's easier. Him trying to look out for Ash and going like, oh, he said he's a fan of my work, so he's probably just a fucking nerd and won't get in that much trouble, and he probably won't get into fights at all. And it's like, oh, you've completely misread this guy. He's so fighty.
He's very fighty, yes.
Which is unusual when he doesn't put up a fight against the same guy whose ass he kicked the prior day. I think it wasn't the day because he was in the cooler for a while.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, but the fight was just so he could get a fork.
Yeah, presumably to make a shiv. He hasn't used it yet, but presumably that's just a Chekhov's shiv type situation.
Yeah, I was like, is he going to wait to get released properly, or does he have some sort of scheme to break out of prison?
Yeah, based off his very complicated plan to pass on a message, it seems like he's planning long term. It's just it's going to take him a while longer to just get out. Just as a guess, maybe the cops can actually do something, though, because they've been quite ineffectual up to this point.
Yeah, and we see how far Ash is willing to go as he allows himself to be raped in order to get a pill to hide a message to pass on to AG, to go and find Shorter Wong, to get his brother away from the doctors.
Or to get the drug, mysterious drug away from the doctor. Yeah. So it can't be traced back to him, basically.
I think it's more specifically the brother, is what he wants to get.
Yeah. He doesn't want to protect that. But he also, like, the drug is one of the few cards he has in his hand, I think.
That is true, yes.
Hmm.
And then, yeah, so unlike Yuri on Ice, we get a kiss actually on screen. No sort of falling over and go, did they kiss? Well, we're never going to see it.
They definitely did, but the movie's got a lot of catching up to do, yeah.
Even though the kiss is romantic, but it turns out to have an ulterior motive with passing this tablet on.
I mean, like, in case you were worried that it wasn't a gay kiss, you do see him slipping the tongue, but it was the slip in the tablet, so yes. Not quite the same.
And then we get the ending where you're like, no, AG, have you never watched any sort of crime film?
Yeah, he just plays up the whole, I am, like, and even the guys in the visitor's room in the prison were kind of like, which one of them is fucking older? What the hell? Yeah, he acts so fucking naive. So, like, I'm on a secret plan, guys, for Ash. Have you seen this guy? I need him to find this specific doctor. And just a guy like fucking texts him. It's like, I have all the information. He's just said it. Overhearing him and just passing it on to Arthur, isn't it?
Arthur's leading the gang now. Because he's got to try and find Shorter Wong to pass the information on to get this job done. But then, yeah, Arthur sends a guy to follow in him. And rather than as he should have done, of say, oh, Shorter's not here, I'll now keep my mouth shut.
I'm looking for Shorter Wong. It's like, well, he's not in. He's not in hiding at the moment. All right, never mind.
Do you know where this doctor lives?
Yeah. It's like, oh, motherfucker. Ash, in his freaking kiss letter, said, don't fucking tell anyone what you're doing. And he keeps explaining it to randos. Dear.
Yeah. But it was well shot, because it's like, yeah, you don't see the guy fully until after he's leaving the restaurant / barber
shop. Yeah. It wasn't like he was a really obvious tale that he should have picked up on, but he is being very naive in how he's dealing with everything. Yeah. Mm.
And he's dressed like the 80s.
He is. He's in disguise.
Yeah, I think this is going to I feel like this is a show where it's going to be weird things where it's like in the updating, it's going, oh, why do you just not set it in the 80s and then all these things would be fine?
it's well, no one's going to believe they're teens if they're not on their mobiles. And it's like, ah, fucking just let it be the 80s. Like, set it, again, I hate to make the comparison, but 91 Days, like, just set it in the time period that it was not written in, but that it was supposed to be set in.
Yeah.
I guess they'd have to change the references, and maybe they think they're being more modern by updating it to the Iraq War, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think the Iraq War thing works. It's just, I think, some of the visuals and perhaps the idea
of
New York being full of gangs who are roaming the streets causing trouble.
Yeah, it's nicer now. dear.
But yeah, another good episode. Definitely, this one's probably the slowest one of the episodes, but still a lot of stuff happens in the jail, and we get him threatening to kill Max by the end once he learns who he really is.
They kind of line up the information they have on the banana fish stuff. Because Max Lobo's looking into it because his brother was one of the last things he said. He was trying to find out what this drug was that messed him up. He felt really guilty, obviously, about having to shoot his brother shoot Griff in the legs. And then Ash is kind of like, yeah, you fucking paralyzed my brother and I blame you for it and I'm going to kill you, that kind of thing. When it's clear that your man is out for his brother's best interest, and they both seem to have a different story as to what happened to him. Ash seems to think he left his brother to die, whereas Max thought they just shipped him back home.
Yeah.
Mm.
And we also learn exactly when Dino got hold of Ash. It's about 6 years ago, I think he says, when he was 11.
Jesus. Yeah. When he was on 10 or 11 or something. Mm. That was pretty horrible. I mean, like, the entire fucking situation is horrible. That situation is horrible.
Yeah. Which is
why... I really do want to see him kick that guy's ass, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're more wanting... there's a clear line of revenge, which 91 Days didn't have, because it was like...
Yeah. It was more so, I need to just find three guys and kill them.
Yeah.
Whereas,
like, I mean, that worked for 91 Days. I just wish 91 Days looked better.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I thought the plot of it worked quite well, and him getting close to the guy and then not wanting to go through with it, all this kind of jazz. Yeah.
And setting other people up to do his work for him.
But this is all like, Banana Fish is also about the mystery and trying to figure out what you need to do in the situation that you've got yourself into. It's a lot messier and interesting for it.
And you get to see Skip get shot again.
I didn't fucking need to see that. I'm good.
We're so adorable, as I believe Ash says.
Yeah, he was a cute kid. I didn't need to see him get shot. Thanks, Joe.
That's to make you mad as well.
Well, fucking victory then.
Then we get to Working Buddies. Episode 3, Department Store Buddies, where the show goes off the rails?
I'm not even sure that's possible in the show anymore. Either they didn't have enough budget to fucking animate this, besides the two frames they do animate, or they just went, fuck it, let's do a fucking live-action one where the guys are still somehow playing cats.
Well, yeah, the point is, I believe, to sell the... I don't know if they're in a boy band or they're like some sort of
idol type situation.
The thing this show is designed to do is to sell, I assume, Working Buddies merchandise and also
the actors'
the guys
faces.
Who are playing the various characters.
You're trying to sell them as a commodity, I suppose. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is why we had the last episode of the last season was them discussing the show. Now here they are in the flesh, but as the characters.
Yeah. I mean, like, if it keeps this up, we might have to stop talking about it because it's not a cartoon anymore. But I mean, like, this was wacky enough that it was just like, yeah, okay, this still counts, I think. Kind of.
Yeah, and there was Cartoon Lions who they were getting their advice from.
Their trainer.
Yeah, the thrust of the episode is them being taught department store etiquette.
Yeah. How low to bow, what's the appropriate thing to say, appropriate first impressions to the customers, that kind of thing. And the guy has teleportation powers, teleported them into a blank white room, which is probably just a recording fucking studio that they have for the anime, because it's cheaper than filming in the department store. and talk to these four lions who are, I don't know, like I guess like supposed to be managers or something.
Yeah, I guess so.
Or advisors, I'm not exactly sure.
Or they're the board, maybe.
Yeah. Definitely something higher up that's going to judge your performance. Because as their floor manager says to them, it's like, oh, you're not going straight to dealing with customers. We're going to have to go into the training room first, and teleports them there.
And then the recurring joke with the lions is that there doesn't need to be four of them, because three of them will give three pieces of wisdom, and then the fourth one will just go, yeah, not much to add. No, just follow what they say.
I think that covers it. Yeah.
And then at the end, the giant mascot costume of the animal who should not be named pops his head out of a dressing room to offer his line of advice, but then the trainer closes the dressing room curtain. Got to maintain the decorum of the customers.
Don't want to be kind of some giant random creature just dispensing wisdom.
Well, a naked giant random creature.
I mean, like, I'm not even... I guess he's naked in the context of them being animals, but when he's like a live action one, I don't know. It's difficult to figure out this show sometimes.
And this all happens within the 3 minutes running time of the show.
Yeah. A lot goes down in it. I don't know what to expect from this show anymore. I know it's just going to try and screw with me from now on. So I'm curious to see it, though.
That's why it's good.
Yeah.
There we go. Bono, season 3, episode 16, The Big Fight, in which Big Sister Sho shoves a log in Chipmunk's home so he can't get into it.
I fucking loved that reveal, because it's like, oh, thanks for helping me bring the nuts, man. Oh, no problem. I'll see you later. And just there's a giant fucking log sticking out of the tree, nearly as big as the fucking tree itself. And he's like, I guess I'll just live here now. But her preparing for that and him not giving a fuck was a pretty great run of jokes.
And then the pair of them just beat themselves, each other up for the entire episode.
Yeah, increasingly like childish fighting antics. I did like Chipmunks as more and more like, now I just have more power. Yes, yes, keep throwing your weapons at me. which eventually works out for him when he throws them all back. I the swing in the rock on the vine, I thought was pretty good. It, like, if you have siblings, this is about right, I think, right?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, yeah. No, I just wanted to make sure that was everyone else's experience as well.
Yeah, I think down to some of the weapons they were coming up with.
Yeah, yeah. Rock on a stick.
Because I think you tie something to a string at some point during your youth, and then you realize when you swing it, you go, ah, like Chipmunk does.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the monkey with the bone in 2001. It's just like, holy shit, I am the destroyer of worlds. But as a little kid, that kind of point of view, yeah. It's pretty fun. Like, it's not like the jokes are like, there's a lot of specific like little ones. It's just like the entire escalation and then de-escalation. I was just like, yeah, this is about right. You just fight until you don't remember why you're fighting. And then it's like, yeah, we're cool.
Yeah, it's because Chipmunk didn't come over when Sho told him to come over. And he's like, I didn't want to come over.
So, do you want to come over now? Yeah, all right.
You want some grapes?
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be great. Just bloodied and bruised, and I was just like, fucking show.
Well, like, Niall's got another
nothing
fight.
Deep, but yeah.
He's got another fight for his head in the cell.
That's true, yeah, yeah. It's a good one.
Yeah, the image of him with the stick, a stick with a rock in it now, and also the rope with the stone on it. And then when he makes the big pile of stones...
Yeah, she throws a rock at him, was it? She throws a rock at him, and he's like, now I have your rock. And he's like, dude, there's rocks everywhere. And he's like, holy shit, there is. And he just gathers them all together. That's an arsenal, I suppose. Yes. dear. Good stuff.
Clever boy.
Mm.
Then we've got My Hero Academia, season 3, episode 53. We are, no, 54, rather, The Test. Mm.
Where we get into the specifics of the license test and also meet some of the other schools. Do we only meet one school or do we meet two?
We meet two.
I thought it was two, but I can't remember the second one.
Their main rivals. No, it is 53. I was right.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Sorry. I just have it numbered wrong on the list.
Yeah, you
I
probably
suppose.
Counted the week there wasn't an episode.
That's probably what I did. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, the main rival school to them, their opposite number in Japan. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like the West's it's UA in the East and this school in the West.
I feel like I've seen that done before. So I assume there's just two rival schools in Japan, like colleges, maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah, quite possibly. We only really get a proper introduction to Inasa because he sneaks up because he's a big fan of UA. He is like, he's like Deku with the confidence and the intelligence flipped.
Yeah, he's all out there but stupid as a rock.
Yeah.
But that'll turn out differently depending on how you see him run as well, which is fun. But yeah, it's basically like you just see his classmates kind of berating him for being so forward, I guess.
Yes.
He just really wanted to say plus ultra.
Yes. He like apologizes so much he makes his head split open.
Yeah, he bows like really hard and really low and starts bleeding from the forehead badly as to do so. And yeah, I'm not sure who mentions it, but it's like, yeah, he got top marks.
It's his, well, the one who mentions the head bleeding is the girl in his class.
Yeah, yeah, but the that he was one of the guys in Japan who got automatic entry.
Yeah,
like Todoroki and Momorozu. No, that's not right. Yo-Yorozu.
Yeah, Mo-Mo. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was just combining the names. But
I can't remember what his quirk is.
It's something like big, but I can't, like, I'm seeing it how it was in the comic, but I can't describe it. You know, that kind of way. The show will do a better job than I could anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that he didn't take his position in UA, like, kind of tells you some stuff. Cause he's technically, like, his power level, I guess, is rated higher than Todoroki. But, which kind of puts him on edge a bit, I suppose. But we mostly see the other school that is, headed by, oh crap, I've forgotten her name.
Miss Joke.
I was going to say Miss Joker. Who wants to marry Aizawa, maybe? But maybe is actually just joking about it. It's impossible to tell. I guess he's the only one her jokes don't work on, so he works as a great straight man.
Yes. They seem to have some sort of past. And they've obviously met each other before, or maybe they were professional heroes together before they became teachers.
Yeah, they either worked in the same agency or near each other or something like that. They do know each other professionally. Yeah.
Which school she's in? So
I've forgotten the name of her school.
Yeah, I can't remember all these schools' names. Rhyme down. So I'm probably gonna have to refer to them multiple times. The other school is the guy who Bakugo points out that he's just pretending to be nice.
Yeah, and the fact that he's going around shaking everyone's hand, I was like, that's clearly his power. He's like fucking Rogue or something. Don't fucking touch him, you idiots. God damn it. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's basically a palette switched Bakugo. He's got exactly the same hair, but black.
Yeah, and I wonder if him being an asshole inside but presenting a happy front outside is, again, another inversion of Bakugo in this case.
Yes, yeah. Could well be, yeah.
Because Bakugo is weirdly a good kid, but who's just so angry outwardly all the time.
Ketsu is the one is the Inasa skull.
Okay.
So, yeah, we see the other, he's a first year student, and then the other ones, do we see the guy who looks like a carpet? Yeah, we do in the back.
Yeah, I don't think he says anything, he's just standing there in like a school uniform and looking like Chewbacca, so now it's just like, what the fuck is that guy's deal?
Yeah, it's Nagamasa, yeah. Seiji, and Kami are the other three we see, who come to retrieve their rogue first year.
Oh, and the fact that he's a first year and he's fucking huge, that's it as well.
Yes. That is true, yeah. It's like, oh, yeah.
Sometimes you get the growth spurt quicker.
Yeah, puberty hits some people at different times. It is Ketsu Butsu Academy is the one, Ms. Joke, and it's Yoshindo is the...
Right.
The t'other guy. The guy who's pretending to be nice.
And besides them, like, trying to take in the rules, I guess, for part one of the test, a lot of it is kind of like the reaction of, you know how badly fucking UA gets fucked up in this, because everyone's seen your shit in the sports day.
Yes. Ms. Jack's wondering why he hasn't told them, and he's like, well, yeah, if I tell them, it's not going to help them.
It wouldn't make any difference anyway. When they're pros, everyone's going to know their powers anyway. So this is just something they're going to have to deal with if they want to be pros, because pros have to deal with this. Yeah,
And Deku figures it out, though, before it starts.
I was wondering if, oh my god, I said his name there earlier, Angry Boy. Bakugo. Yeah. I was wondering if he figured it out beforehand, because he does separate himself off from the group. He's like, okay, this is just a big old fucking target. I'm going to separate myself from these guys.
Because him and Todoroki both wander off, don't they? On their own after.
Yeah, yeah.
Deku's basically like, the only way we're going to survive this is if we all stay together. And Bakugo's like, I'm off. And Todoroki's like, my power doesn't work very well when I've got to worry about other people around me. which I feel is a mistake as well. I feel like he's got to learn how to use his powers.
Yeah, I feel like that's like a growing moment for Todoroki, but the reason I attribute Bakugo with like figuring it out a little is because he's smart.
Yes.
Like, smarter than he looks anyway.
But he's also arrogant.
That's the other thing, yeah, thinking he can do it on his own, which is another thing he needs to learn to rely on people. But yeah, the setup, what's your man who's like the most tired man you've ever seen?
Oh yeah, he's from the Hero Public... what they call
License Committee something or other. Yeah,
the Hero Public Safety Commission.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I know. I was like, oh, because they showed up in this week's chapter as well. So. Not
is
him.
He still wrecked or
no? He doesn't.
Oh,
but the organization.
That's a pity. I like him. I just like how tired that man is. I feel like I've been given speeches by people that fucking tired before. It felt very real to me. You know.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, there's like a bit, this week's chapter is a big chapter.
Okay.
And not
it's weird the way it's lining up again, yeah.
Not involving anybody, not really involving any of the main characters, so I assume, like One Piece, it will quickly go, abruptly cut this short and go back to the main characters as they go.
It'll give them more to concentrate on in the anime, it'll be fine.
Well, yeah, they've done an entire arc where... the main characters, if they've been shown, have been sitting in the dorms watching things happen on TV while other characters...
While world events happen, sure.
...the story.
Mm.
Yeah, so I feel like, oh, this is where this story ends, and then they'll go back to doing a school-related thing next time.
Hmm.
There's other stuff before all this happens, though. There's the romance, the girls wanting to talk about. Well, Mina in particular. Really, what?
I
don't care what we talk about as long as it ends up talking about romance or whatever her life.
She's just like, I guess it's just her age. Like, she's just a bit boy crazy, but not that she's crazy for chasing boys. She just wants to gossip.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they figure, well, I mean, like, it's not that it takes much fucking effort to figure out that, that Rarika likes someone, and B, that it's probably either Deku or Ida, because she's always hanging out with those two lads. It's got to be one of those two, then.
Yeah, and she gets so embarrassed she floats to the ceiling and then spots Deku training outside.
So dreamy. If they just followed her gaze, they could figure it out. But
yeah. This is, I mean, that aspect is part, that is a major part of this arc.
Okay.
And also, have you read all this arc?
I don't think I finished it.
Yeah,
no.
Because I've read all this arc. I do like this arc a lot. There's a thing which I assume this season will end on, which is foreshadowed in this episode, and I did when it got to the ending of the arc, I did not remember the thing that happens in this episode, in the chapter. I'm sure it did. And when I saw it in this episode, I was like,
I think I'll do the thing of watching this rather than reading the manga. No, that's fine, it's fine.
But I was impressed with the amount of foreshadowing.
Mm, okay.
One particular thing, but there's other things as well.
Sure.
So the first part of the exam is, we should mention that, is it's like a...
Oh, yeah, the actual test.
Dodgeball?
Yeah, you've got three targets that you have to put on your body, but you can't, like, put them in some place. Yeah, it can't be in your armpits or the soles of your feet, like some place where they can't be hit. Like, it's not that you can't block them, it's just that they need to be visible as you're walking around and shit. And you have, is it six tennis balls?
It's five or six. It's like not many.
Yeah, there's not much anyway. And you have to knock out three people or one person?
I think it's two people.
Is it two people? Okay.
Yeah, so it's basically...
You get knocked out once all your targets have been hit.
Yes. So, for the first thing,
not everyone's going to get through this very clearly. Like, yeah.
Technically, you only need two balls because you can pick off people who've two targets hit.
Yeah. Pick up the scraps, as it were.
I can't remember what the rule is for all these extra balls UA have got by the end of the episode.
like, can you use, like, are they stealing tennis balls? Can you use anyone's tennis balls? Because I think that's fine. It doesn't suggest that it's like you only have this many tennis balls, because even in this episode, yeah, there's so many balls been thrown. It's like, are they just combining their efforts or something? Yeah, what's going on here?
Yeah, because it's like everybody piles on UA at the end of the episode. But UA, rather than some people deflect them, but an awful lot of people just stop the balls and have now got the balls, because there's people with powers, or in some cases with Mina, destroy the balls by melting them.
Yeah.
But yeah, Albanita's power, very useful in this ball situation, because you can just catch the ball and a big whip of his hair.
Sticky whip, which is probably what he's going to call that, and it's as gross as him. it's kind of fun them seeing, like, kicking it back. And I like the Deku kind of hitting it back as well. I was like, that's pretty good, and it kind of shows us, like, yeah, he's going to be a lot more soccer looking from now on. Which I'm fine with. That's like a different kind of look from a shonen hero. Yeah,
and it also takes him more towards a Japanese superhero in the form of Kamen Rider. So if in some way he decides to get a motorcycle, he's sorted.
Oh shit, I didn't consider that. Fuck, he's already green.
He is. I imagine at some point, yeah, he'll probably have to start out on a moped though.
Get his provisional license for that. Then his hero license for hero mopeding. Okay.
I could definitely see him on a moped.
Because he's kind of lame, but he's cool. Yeah, moped. Yeah.
If not in the actual comic, maybe on a cover at some point.
Okay.
Because I guess there is a bit of Kamen Rider to, obviously he's dressed, he looks more like a rabbit, but the antennae is...
Yeah.
He looks like a rabbit because he's copying the antennae hair of All Might.
Mm. All Might's still dealing with the whole, like, lack of power situation. Yeah.
No, good episode.
Introduces a lot of guys, but it feels good for it.
Yeah, there's like a lot of people, but it's clearly like, oh, there's only going to be so many we need to worry about.
Yeah, just these guys that we've made very clear design choices on, or the camera lingers on for a second, is like, yeah, that person's going to matter. In this story, at least, yeah. But at one point, Froppy gets the number wrong, because actually, it's the other thing about the test is only the first 100 people who get enough points to pass. Pass, and everyone after that automatically fails. And there's like, there's over 1,000 people there, right?
Yeah.
But she says, oh, only 1% wins. And I was like, wait a minute, I'm just calculating. I was like, that's not fucking right. And I thought maybe she was counting it between like that and the other two tests which happen in Japan. Because obviously the other thing it establishes is they won't be fighting the class 1B, or is it 2B?
It's 1B.
Yeah, 1B.
Because that first
Because, so the schools don't compete with each other. They kind of separate them between these three stages in Japan. It was interesting, but I was kind of like, what? It seems kind of odd that they got that number wrong. Or maybe I'm just counting it wrong, one of the things was translated wrong.
Yeah, it's like a standard. Do they have like a standard 20 people in each class in every of these superhero schools? I don't know.
Yeah, there might be an amount for a classroom or something, like a standardized one.
But clearly after doing 20 for each of the UA classes, he wasn't going to do 20 for all these other classes.
that'd be a long-ass episode. He's a new guy. Yet.
Yeah.
Not yet. Eventually, sure. I mean, the world's already filled with fucking characters, and it's barely into their first year.
he hasn't filled out all the... The year two and year three students.
The years above them. yeah.
Right, let's look at next. We've got... did you watch any more Cells at Work?
No, didn't manage to get it in. Have you watched more? Or?
No, I didn't know. I was not going to. I was got all things to watch, like Planet With. Boom! Blow your brains out. It's got even stranger. As it expands further, we get Norio Wakamoto voicing a dog of the same race as the cat, and the cat actually talking, but only in his dreams.
That's a stage play
yeah.
in his dreams.
And it also appears that the assistant of the dragon guy who's in charge of Grand Paladin is also working with the aliens, because she seems to be the person whose lower half of the body we see telling the doctor he's got to come away.
Yeah, yeah, and obviously in the end credits, she's pictured, or her reflection is pictured alongside the dog.
Yeah, and they also...
And the dog who's still in fucking shadow, like this mystery, who's this mystery? It's a dog, it's a fucking alien dog, man.
And they mention when the new, what do they call them, nebula weapon has shown up.
Yeah,
the upside down babies at the end.
They ask They're trying out some new shit.
How do you know so much about these monsters? Which she just laps
off. Yeah. So, I mean, like, is she a third faction? Is this the alien? Is she involved because it's the aliens actively performing the test? We have to give them the ability. We have to give them superpowers so that they can choose power over love, that kind of way.
Yeah.
Like introducing temptation, essentially.
We shall see. We shall see. But yeah, so he has to get out of the fight. He tries to fight them all. He does a pretty good shit fighting them until the chief of Grand Paladin uses his... Turns out he's got one of these crystals as well, and he can turn into a dragon.
And he's got a crazy laser beam that is terrifying.
Yes. He manages to tear both arms off the other judo girl.
Yeah, I mean, like, she's actually doing pretty good against him, but his smashing thing is a little bit stronger than her just regular punches, yeah.
And they get away when a giant version of the cat shows up.
And eats them.
Eats them, yes. Well, we later
eats them and then just fucking sits down and stays there, which is great.
And it's clear, like, the guy, the Grand Paladin dragon guy knows something because he tells them not to fight it.
Yeah, it's like, what, you can shoot giant lasers, says one of them. It's like, no, he probably has a good reason to not fight it. We'll trust him, said the other. Guys, our other heroes. But the kind of thing of him just looking at it and going like, I'm not going to fuck with that thing. After, like, shooting a mountain in half.
And we, like, learn that's his spaceship.
Yeah. His spaceship looks like him, or that's the shape he's chosen for himself and his spaceship? I'm no fucking clue.
I think it looks like him, because the aliens are called, like, Kimigurians.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know whether... Well, maybe they are just people wearing animal costumes.
Yeah, or it could be like we have to choose a shape in which we interact with the humans, and maybe on an alien planet that would be a weird cartoon alien dog or something.
Yeah, and there's like a hint that this nebula is an association of races.
Yeah, it's like people who have managed to choose love over power or whatever the hell.
Or have been attacked by this dragon at some point.
Yes, and that's why they instituted this. It's not entirely clear, even though it's just like the kid having a dream and just sitting there with a bucket of fried chicken and just like, holy shit, this is all the fucking exposition. Oh, fuck, I got to take notes instead of eat this fried chicken.
And then he goes to bite it. He wakes up, but he's taking a big bite of his duvet.
I've had that dream. Not with a bucket of fried chicken and a cat and fucking thing on the stage explaining the plot to me. But, the bite bit.
As terms of exposition go, though, that worked really well. Because, again, it was exposition but presented in an incredibly strange way.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, let's just lay it on the fucking line what we're talking about. Not everything, but enough to go like, holy shit, that's a lot of exposition. But in just such a... Did he fucking dream that? Did they communicate in dreams? Why... Is it on stage? All the world's a stage? What's happening?
And he is apologetic about not following the orders previously, and then they tell him he should go to school. And
his friend showed up on the news saying, it's like, you know, to the news reporter, he said he was going to the bathroom, but he didn't come back for 3 days. I'm sure he's fine, says the newscaster kind of thing. It's like, yeah, your friends are worried about you.
Well, no, it's better than that. She wonders, did he ever find the bathroom? I imagine he did.
I'm sure he found that was her words of condolences. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like not only was she worried that he was missing, she was worried
but that
he
never found the bathroom.
Searching for a bathroom.
3 days in. Yeah. But that causes him to join. Well, when she sees him again, she basically strong arms him into joining the occult club. I couldn't think of the name of it because I was like, they explain it's all the occult stuff. and the many different genres of occult stuff, but they're all just smashed together. And they need five members. That's like a yes. standard club thing. But so he makes a fifth, and the other two guys don't fucking show up. So it's just the class rep, whose name I also keep forgetting now. God damn it. And that's the thing yes. of it. It's a long name. That's one of the things messing with me.
And then one of the guys from Ground Paladin shows up.
He doesn't recognize him as such, obviously, because he hasn't seen him.
Not until right to the end of the episode.
Yes, yes.
So he shows up. Apparently he's graduated high school, but...
He shows up to use the library in this place, the extensive UFO and UMA fucking library that they have.
He still wears his school uniform as cosplay.
He doesn't even read the books. It's just to look cool, says one of the club members, the other club member, which is just like, what? What is up with this guy? But our main guy takes a liking to him because he's all right.
Yeah.
He's a weirdo, but he's all right.
I like the bit where what's the game they're playing? Reversi.
Yes. A
crazy bit of board game product placement. they start playing it. It cuts, and it looks like he's done incredibly well with how he's posing and how the boards is. And it turns out you just think, you're so much better than me at this game.
Yeah. Like, he's clearly like a fucking dope. And that's something to like about him. It makes him more likable. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like how Sawyer's looking at the board, dismayed. He looks like he's like, he can't believe that he's lost so badly, but he actually is like,
I can't believe that guy's lost so badly. Like, he's older than me, and he's the weirdo, and he dresses like he's still in the fucking school, and he comes into school like he's still in fucking school, and he lost to a little fucking kid. The hell is wrong with this guy? It's good. It's a good bit.
And he takes a liking to a book about UMAs and what is the? It's not Loch Ness Monster. It's the Japanese Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah. It's definitely a Japanese kind of Nessie thing.
Come back to that to a point where I'm like, that's going to pay off at some point. Where is this show going if that's foreshadowing something?
Yeah. Or maybe the fact that he's into monsters like shows him why. He has that connection to the dragon or something. He identifies himself at the start of the episode as the title. I'm not an invader. I'm an Avenger.
Yes.
So he obviously likes monsters or is on the monster's side, and that's why he's into the UMAs. Yeah.
Also, he says that he finds it cute.
Like the cat girl says something that the weird upside down babies are cute or something.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's not as cute as that specific Japanese Nessie. And she's like, the fuck? Yeah, so that's definitely going to come up. The fact that they've made such a point of that. Other than that, it's a very weird thing to put in. And I feel like none of this show is done haphazardly.
No, and it's like, no matter what turns it takes, they feel deliberate turns.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's feeding you enough that you're building up this picture. The picture doesn't make sense yet, but you've got enough... You can see enough of a shape, but there's still like loads of the picture left to be revealed.
Yeah. I think like a hint was the class rep drawing one of the unidentified flying objects on the board. And besides the fact that she can't draw like arms and shit, which is more so like a technical drawing kind of thing, her drawing was astonishingly accurate. So it's like these aliens are... children, it's like, we'll just make something cute that the humans won't be afraid of. Like, what are humans like? Babies? Brilliant. All right.
Lots of
babies, so they won't know which one to attack and which way do babies face. It doesn't matter, just whatever way. So just babies walking upside down through the sky in formation, I guess.
I know what they kind of remind me of. Cute. Like if the monsters and Gants were attempted to be cute rather than scary.
Yeah, they appear to be going like they're trying to. We obviously have to invade with some kind of spaceshipy type situation to do this whole test. But let's not try and freak them out. Let's make something they'd like, something nice and cute. Yeah, that seems to be what the aliens are going for, but completely fucking it up every time because when you put something at that scale and have them be upside down walking babies, it's just terrifying.
Oh, and I forgot that guy's name, or at least the name he claims he's got is Judgment Nazuria.
Because his father's a lawyer when he's actually like a baker or something.
Yeah. So him and Harumi enter the weak spot.
They enter two different weak spots as well.
Yes.
And they which is another clue, I guess.
You see two different things, but we only see
They're back to back, and but from their point of view, they see what she sees a field, a garden,
field full of
and
flowers.
He sees like this golden palace or something like that. And then, in the next cut, they're not in the same place, so we don't know exactly what he went through.
Yeah. Harumi is sort of focusing on her relationship with Miyu and about I guess she felt like she was in the protective role in their relationship, but it's like it's trying to convince her to let go of that. You can let other people protect you. You don't have to always be the one.
Yeah, what was the message she got for breaking through her?
Is it like you're not afraid to be weak?
That was the one last week.
That was the one last week.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember specifically what the other girl's one is.
Feel like she'd be writing this down on a whiteboard like they were doing in the actual show.
I think it might fucking help. But her kind of thing is it's about her feelings towards this girl, and obviously in the episode you see her like, and everyone's like remarking on it, on the change of her personality, that the Deadly Serious, and she wants to keep practicing judo on everyone else, which they're not too enthused on, because she feels that she's failed as a protector. So I think it's, you even see her inner self kind of come out in reality.
Yeah.
And her idealized thing is that she is the other girl, instead of, because she viewed the other girl as a princess when she first came to school, and she obviously got a crush on her initially. But in her fantasy, the other girl sees her as a princess and is being her prince.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like this thing that allows her to not be the aggressor, the one in charge, the defender, I suppose.
Yeah.
But the fact that she has to reject that, yeah.
Yeah, and I like the fact that the rejection happens quicker each time, because they now know the trick of what the aliens are trying to do to them.
They know the trick, but you can see it's still a bit of a, like, ah, oh, goddammit, I really like this, but I have to fucking get rid of it, yeah.
But the problem is that Judgment is presumably having his own one.
Yeah.
And when she breaks out and destroys the nebula weapon, he is just thrown out of the nebula weapon, plummeting towards the ground, still asleep.
Yeah, not in his psychic armor or whatever the hell they call that. Yeah, yeah.
I'm just trying to get to the point where you get... And so, yeah, and then the good quote-unquote good guys are watching on, and yeah, Sawyer's shocked that...
It's his senpai from school. Yeah.
I just realized his name's Sawyer as well, and all the vegetarian stuff.
Sawyer? What's the
I'm hero not gonna... is, well, like soy, like...
Oh, sorry, I was thinking like Tom Sawyer. Yeah.
With them all being vegans, or at least vegetarians. Let me see if I can get this, what the message was that the alien gave her.
Oh, yeah, it might be relevant, sure.
It may well be. I should remember to write it down, form a list.
I feel like, this is the show I got to take like the most notes on, nearly.
Start a separate Google Doc document. All our Planet With theories. I'm pleased this is on, because this gives me like, nobody's afraid of you, that's what it was.
That was it. She had to give up her the fact that she is the best at judo, and she is the strongest and is the protector, and just has to give up on that. Yeah. It was I knew it was something very similar, but like inverted to the other girl's dream. Mm.
Yeah, so the question is, will our hero rush to save his enemy? Because they're friends.
Hmm. But based off this show, I feel like it could do some other kind of turn. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Will we join the action in a completely different point next week?
Yeah. Could do. It would be the only thing putting me off the show, potentially. But I really don't know where this is going. But the way it's doing it, it's very deliberate. And it's like I'm enjoying seeing the pieces fall into place and figuring out what it means.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing was that the reason the Masters brought Sawyer with him is because he feels guilty about not saving Sirius.
Oh, that's... Yeah, Sawyer is actually an alien, I suppose?
Yes.
Mm. And they mentioned that in the stage play, that it's kind of cruel. The cat thinks it's cruel that they're not, because once you're locked in on a planet, you're not allowed to evolve anymore.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting one. So you're, is that why, is that why he's like desiring meat? He is after power and is a carnivore and, that's why they're a cat and a dog or something? I don't fucking know, man.
No, I don't know. I think the cat and the dog kind of throws out the...
the non-meat eater thing,
but
yeah.
But also like the... because obviously there is some sort of zodiac thing going on.
But there's also definitely like a predatory animal, yeah, or meat eating or something like that is definitely a thing, yeah.
But now the dog's not on the same side as the other ones, so it's like, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, there's bits there, but we don't have the whole fucking thing.
And yeah, it may turn out to be a very different shape by the end of the series.
Yeah, yeah. Really enjoying it, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's cracking stuff. It's, I think it pays off of having a guy who's been thinking about this for a massive amount of time finally getting to make it.
Yeah, probably had enough time to really work on where it's going and what it wants to say. Yeah.
Yeah, and I know people are kind of lukewarm on the new Fooly Cooly. I've not watched it. I know people who really like it, but
yeah, I mean, I've only seen clips and everything.
I don't think there's anybody who hates it.
No. It's not coming from the same kind of creators kind of voices, and the best complaint I saw was that it's, back in the day, nothing else looked like this, but now a lot of things look this fucking good.
It gives me some sort of, it doesn't feel exactly like Fooly Cooly, but it kind of gives me that thrill of like, oh, this is a weird, it's familiarly anime, but it's doing different things with the pieces.
I feel like it has something else that it's trying to say that I still am not sure of, but obviously a lot of it is coming down to the individual characters and adolescence and how you view yourself and the people around you and shit, which obviously makes it very Fooly Cooly. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, unlike Fooly Cooly, the only things it's referencing are other works by the author. It's not drowning you with, look how clever we are, we animated this in South Park, which I loved at the time, but imagine if you'd had 18 years of people showing off like that. And luckily,
at the time, that was original and brilliant, but like now it's not that even that's all that, it's just I guess so many people have fucking done that kind of joke in the meantime. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it actually feels like, oh, this is, in not doing that, taking that approach, even though you could easily see it, could do it. It's like the alien designs are so weird.
Yeah.
That it feels, I think that's the initial thing it brings to the table, which makes you sit up and take notice. It's like, what the fuck is that? Is definitely another unidentified flying object.
I can tell you what it looks like, but I can't tell you what the fuck it is. Yeah, yeah.
Then we got Gegege no Kitaro, episode 17, Kanibozo and the Ancient Mystery.
Where we fulfill the promise of that town's statues.
In this episode, Sandwich is mistaken for a princess.
Did we say before that she's voiced by Luffy? They're the same actress as Luffy.
No, I don't think we have mentioned.
Because this episode was fucking clear. I was like, wait, that's fucking Luffy, isn't it? And I had to look it up. It was really bugging me. Because she gets more dialogue than she has.
Yeah,
so far,
that's true. And we're not used to hearing her voice an actual woman.
Yeah, that's true.
She has either played, I think mainly played teenage boys, or...
That's off on the way, yeah.
Yurusai Sura, which I think might have been a breakout role. A teenage girl who was raised as a teenage boy, which is probably the ideal voice for that. So now she's playing, well, it'd be rude to say a woman closer to her old age, because she's
be terribly rude. Yeah, don't know. I guess playing an older lady,
yes,
right.
But yeah, I like her a lot in this, that character, because she is not taking any nonsense from this monk. She's
not really even taking the compliment of being called Ohime-sama, like being called a fucking princess or anything. She's like, nope, not me.
So this monk shown up, he's vomiting, he asks people to ask, he goes, what's my name?
Yeah, he's got what the riddle. I walk sideways, like in English, I assume it's different in Japanese. I walk sideways and my eyes look to the heavens. Who am I? And, you know, most people are like, who the fuck are you? Or rather, the drunk is like, the fuck is this?
I was going to hit you with this baseball bat.
Nope, wrong answer. And then he vomits bubbles on them to turn them into bronze statues of themselves.
Yes.
Like old bronze statues as well, which is kind of weird, but yeah.
And Nizumi Otoko is also up to some sort of scam.
Well, he figures he could sell anti-de-bronzing boogers, because that'll cost him nothing. Yeah.
He also gets turned into a statue, and
he's
one of the people who doesn't get turned back from being a statue at the end of the episode.
I liked that joke because I was like, fucking good. Fuck that guy.
To solve the problem, they enlist the help of the Tengu, who don't really want to get involved, but then there's a handsome young Tengu who's got the...
You can't resist Mana's charms, basically. Yes. Yeah.
I would say the hots, but he's attracted to Mana.
Yeah, like a kiddie teenager kind of way. Yeah. Nothing untoward. Like, not general, like, Tengu from tradition kind of thing. Nothing creepy.
He convinces through his actions, not through his speech, for the other Tengu to help get the water which will cure the bronzeness and turn people back to normal. Meanwhile, the sandwich, goes, you're the crab monk. And he's like, oh, and turns into a crab and goes on a rampage. And at this point, Kitaro's no longer a bronze statue and he can come and kick its ass.
Yeah, I think he uses the hair. Does he use a hair spear in this one or does he use a different move?
I can't remember. I know it ends with...
He pulls out a new move anyway,
crab ends up getting turned to bronze himself. And they're like, maybe he did this just to...
because his story is pretty tragic. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, because he was a yokai who was protecting a princess.
Yeah, and all the other yokai was like, hey, don't get involved in humans. It's like, I'm just trying to fucking help someone out. There's nothing wrong with that. But he was sealed away by some monk, and obviously the princess died centuries ago or something. Oh, no, it was in the Warring States, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously... It's like he must have, Sandwich says as much, like he must have figured out from the look of the fucking modern world that it's been quite a while since. So he's just looking for someone who can beat him up and stop him feeling like this. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, tragic ghost story, I guess.
Yeah, so they leave him as a statue and make new statues of all their yokai friends as an attraction for the town.
Well, no, to keep him company. That's where they placed him along the high street.
sure.
Mm.
And it looks like our yokai friends go back home, but it looks like we're still here next week.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite, and it wasn't a joke, it just made me laugh, where Mana looks directly at the camera and says, come and see the statues, you know, and I was just like, fucking sure, that's just so blatant, come on.
I like it though. I mean, it's kind of
it's great. Yeah,
I'm thinking if I ever do go to Japan, that maybe I do want to come in to this town.
It does look nice in the cartoon.
Nice. All those statues, man, it's always a good attraction. I mean, lots of people people do those, like, oh, here's a statue of a thing, and then they paint them all different types, don't they?
Yeah.
So I think, does Bristol have grommets, I think, from Wallace and Gromit?
I think
we've got cows or oxes in Oxford.
The famous cows.
Well, the oxes, at least. The oxes makes more sense.
Yeah.
Whereas, obviously, it's going to be individual bronze statues.
Be great. Mm. You get selfies and everything, yeah.
Yeah, it's Kitaro. It's great. I've not got this story. I can't remember what the trailer was for the next one, except I got the...
I've forgotten that
I do have that story. We shall see. Sometimes, though, I think I've got the story and it's like a monster who's quite similar, but not exactly the same as what I've read.
Yeah. Well, obviously they changed this one to fit into Kitaro Town. I did like the riddle he presents as well, because I would have just been like, that's a crab, isn't it? And it's like, wrong, because that's what gets Katchik. And I was kind of thinking, like, that's pretty good, because I was like, oh, you have to know his specific name. It wasn't so much a riddle. It looked like a riddle. It was just like, what's my name? And if you know my name, then you know me, and therefore you're working with me, that kind of way. It was a good turn on it.
Yes. Let me see. That ending theme is growing on me a lot.
I kind of missed that wee-wee-oo. Still. But yeah, it's pretty positive.
Yeah. Let me see what the next one... Oh, is it... It's Katchik Focus. No, I haven't seen this one. She's working on a farm.
Oh, yeah. It's them wondering if it's really her, or is she acting more monster or yokai or something like that. Yeah.
And I think it's another Tanaki. Is Kawasua? Kawausoa Tanaki? He's not one of the ones from...
Not one of the army. Yeah.
Not one of those particular bunch of... guys.
They're not all bad. That was just a particularly bad group.
That was just a particularly bad group. That's why they've been sealed away.
Mm. So when the other yokai are defeated, are they dead like the crab in this one, or what's the dealio?
Oh, he's an otter. He's an otter yokai.
Ah, okay. I can see how you mix it up with a tanuki. Yes, wait a minute. You shouldn't mix those up, because that's like Bonobono and Raccoon. They look nothing alike.
Kawauso Kitaro. Clay is also just the name for otters.
Yeah.
He first appears in Yokai of Obebe Swamp. He is a river otter. So he doesn't look...
Ah,
so
not a sea otter. Okay. I figured if it was in the town, it'd be a sea otter, right?
Yes, I do have this then. That's why I think he's a tanuki, because
You've spoiled it.
The manga changed him to a tanuki in the translation.
Oh, okay. Just probably easier to go with a known quantity. Yeah.
Yes, I do have this. Okay, yeah. I've now got all the stuff which has been released in English. I've got to wait till next year now for the next volume.
Okay.
So, it's going to drive me crazy, because I really love this series. I mean, I love the TV series. The comic gets so weird with the terrible things that happen to Kitaro's body. I kind of wish they'd go there at some point.
He's been turned to stone and bronze, but that's... And a tree, now that I think about it.
The last story I read involved him getting liquefied.
Okay, hasn't happened yet.
Because a vampire tried to drink his blood and he tasted horrible. So he poisoned him to turn him into liquid. He turned him into liquid, but then his skull had gone missing, so his bones were all there. But he's like, where's his skull? And then his skull was outside the vampire's room. He's like, how did that skull get here? And then he thinks he's being chased around by Kitaro, because this skull keeps on turning up to headbutt him. But it's actually Kitaro's dad inside the skull.
Moving it around?
Yes. He collected up all the juices of Kitaro and put them in a jar so he could regenerate him at the end of the story. But Kitaro is, for all effects, mainly dead during the story.
I guess back then there was less established rules of how to do this kind of shonen thing. Just go mad with it. Be as gory as you want.
Yeah, some of them I don't necessarily know they were in a shonen magazine, because it was also running in Garou at the same time.
Right, okay.
The arty, the best paid manga magazine in the 60s. So you want to get
the more high class stuff, yeah. Right.
Yeah, so I don't know whether... it does tell you where each of the strips ran, so I didn't actually go to see. But yeah, I do wish, there was some, like, more terrible things happening to Kitaro in the show. Because he feels a bit like a... quite often he feels like a outside force coming in to fix chaos.
Yeah, reactionary kind of superhero type situation. Yeah.
He gets transformed. We see him transformed into things, but quite often in the manga, he'll get mixed up right from the start due to Nozomi Otoko. So in this vampire one, the government hire him. and they like, oh, if you sort out this vampire we've got troubles with, we'll make you a Japanese citizen. And you'll have all the rights of a Japanese citizen. And he's like, I just want some money for food. Because quite often Kitaro is also feels like an I can't remember what they're called now. I did look it up for doing. There's like a cast of people who were treated really badly and like accused of crimes around this time in Japan.
Yeah, no, it's not the guys from that other show last season. God damn it.
No, it's not those. No, it's
but it's a similar kind of situation, mistreatment kind of thing. Yeah.
But it ties in more to like the homelessness of Nozomi Otoko and Kitaro.
Okay.
Because I think that was what Concrete Revolution were going for at some point when they were like accusing. I think it was for yokai or for superheroes they were using as a metaphor.
They were using both at different times. Yeah.
But I think there was like it was with the. The kidnapping of children bit. I think falsely accused. But because he was of this particular cast of people easily, because of their prejudices, jumped to assuming that was the situation.
In the case of your man, he's like, he's a weird superhero, so it's likely he did it that kind of way. Yeah, I get you.
Well, no, he wasn't even a weird superhero. It was like but they just assumed he was,
Yeah, they assumed he had weird, unusual, unnatural powers, and he's an outsider
from
basically.
The government,
sure.
As opposed to,
Yeah,
so that was probably the metaphor he was going for along those lines, particularly in the handling of those two characters.
I kind of wish I didn't know most Japanese history from fucking Concrete Revolutio,
the lens of superhero and monster shows.
I mean, but it is pretty good, so I'm not going to complain. That's how I know it. Yeah.
Yes, and I mean it does stick more to the metaphor than say Watchmen did. Watchmen like started at a point and then
it was more like a what if. Yeah.
Whereas this feels like. It always feels like, okay, how are we going to represent this thing in history via the medium of what was happening in pop culture at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, like, if that was the real world, why the fuck would anyone make Transformers? But no, we just have to reference why Transformers was a thing in our show. That kind of,
And it's also like how the politics of the day influenced that pop culture and sort of fed backwards into it. Man, if only it looked better in that second season. And there was one more episode, and one or two more episodes.
I know. That's about the major negative of it. But I actually, the other thing was, I think we kind of liked the back and forth in the first season a little better, and figuring out where in the fucking timeline we were our boards at home.
The first season is far superior to the second. But there's stuff in the second, which I really like as well.
No, it has a lot of good bits, yeah.
Righty-ho! That is everything we've successfully recorded in an entire episode.
Hooray!
Famous last words. that ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast with weekly anime. Before we say goodbye, let's find out what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain. I'll start with Dynamite in the Brain. Nothing's come up because the episode we recorded has been lost on that laptop, which died when we attempted to record this. So,
oh no!
There may not be an episode. If there is one, it'll be a hastily convened what happened at Amicon.
So is that board just completely fucking dead?
I assume like one component.
Oh, that's a balls. I thought you might be able to like hook it up to something else and recover it.
No, I could probably hook the I could probably take the hard drive out and hook that up and recover it, but that would involve spending money on getting a hookup. So I've got to get in contact with Dell and get it sent, picked up or sent back. Unless it turns out to be too expensive to do all that, in which case I'll just say, fuck it, I shall attempt to do it to myself at some point in the future. But as it is, it was like buying a a secondhand car, which turned out to be not as good as it was.
More trouble than it was worth. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the thing. I think the extra reduction in price should have been a warning.
Okay.
Yes, a little bit, but yeah, most annoyingly, if it had happened after the convention, I would have been less annoyed and I would have been less sweaty. When it happened and we had to abandon the podcast because my brain was just like in rage mode and my body was just like, I am now going to get rid of all your fluids out of your sweat pores as you panic about what you're going to do about this convention. Anyway, it's all sorted. Everything's worked. I've got a backup laptop and all good to go. And also, we've got this new way of recording using VoiceMeet Banana, and that should no longer... We could just do everything off one computer.
Mm, should be useful.
Yeah, I may need to get a new sound card, or at least move the sound card, because I think I'm getting a little bit of background noise off this microphone.
Okay.
On the way in. But other than that, it should at least exist as a podcast. But what's coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness?
If you go there right now... oh, sorry. Throat catching. If you go there right now, you'll have the episode where we're talking about stuff that had recently ended, where it was intended to talk about stuff that was just starting, but hey, that's how much we got delayed.
One of them is just on Netflix.
Oh, which one got... Oh, that's right. Final Space got picked up on Netflix.
The UK, it's a Netflix original.
Yep, same here. I've started watching it as well. I'm still enjoying it, although the most complaints I've heard are the main guy's voice, which some people just cannot take, and that's understandable. That's fine.
It's a case of the creator doing the main voice, isn't it?
I mean, like, yeah, it is. I think he does a good job, but I can see how it's not everyone's cup of tea. We'll probably have to do that as an episode of itself at some stage. But coming up soon, it's in the can, but it ain't online, is our episode. We're talking about, like, what would have been, like, proto-music videos to some extent. Early musical acts and stuff in Disney's Merry Melodies and going on to musical acts working in Betty Boop and that kind of thing. And cinema, musical releases, the little cartoon shorts kind of thing. Just early touching on that. We'll do some later episodes on similar subjects and actually get into like MTV type situations eventually. But I thought it works kind of like as a little primer for that kind of stuff.
Good, good, good. I think I remember liking the Betty Boop type stuff. I never liked watching Merry Melodies or whatever the Disney version thing was called.
Yeah. I mean, like, that was obviously you're taking a lot of...
Because Merry Melodies was Warner's, wasn't it? Merry Melodies is the thing which evolved into Looney Tunes.
Yeah, you're right. I used the wrong fucking thing. I meant to say the Disney one was Silly Symphonies. That's the one we're mostly talking about here. Yeah. Obviously, the Warner Brothers thing, we're kind of taking a title off it, but not doing the same thing. The early Disney stuff, the Silly Symphonies, is what we're actually talking about in the episode. Whoops. Is, you know, you're kind of guys coming off Broadway or whatever the hell, composers composing a little bit of music for it. And then, obviously, the Betty Boop stuff, they tend to take up, like, we talk about some of the Cab Calloway ones and that kind of thing, like, yeah. Current artists and what at the time, and bringing them up and kind of having them be the forefront and them be the draw for it, which, yeah, again, will kind of lead into what becomes like animated music videos. Mm.
Yeah, the Fleischer stuff's always seemed a bit more hip.
Yeah, no, definitely. They we talk about it in the episode, they were so like into the current culture, it's what got them in so much fucking trouble. But
we were very much a MGM and Warner Brothers house growing up, so
okay, fair enough.
No, parents didn't like watching Walt Disney cartoons all that much, but we still dragged to them.
There's good ones there, but like I kind of prefer a lot of the stuff that was a reaction to it.
Yes.
But yeah, we obviously needed that as a primer to talk about some of these other things. It's the thing that started it, and then what other people did after in reaction to and to make their own mark on that market is more interesting to me as well. Yeah.
Rightio, that's your lot. We'll see you next week on another episode of Let's Go. Goodbye.
Bye.